to be the only thing between us and the end of everything we've managed to do so far. I think they may very well not have any kittens for some time, partly because this isn't the season, and partly because the life's so strange to them. And when they do, the kittens will very likely have a lot of this man-bred hutch stock in them. But what else is there to hope for? We must do the best we can with what we've got.
Has anyone mated with them yet? Asked Hazel.
No. Neither of them has been ready so far. But I can see some fine old fights breaking out when they are.
That's another problem. We can't go on with nothing but these two does.
But what else can we do?
I know what we've got to do, said Hazel, but I still can't see how. We've got to go back and get some does out of Ephrafa.
You might as well say you were going to get them out of Inlay, Hazel Ra. I'm afraid I can't have given you a very clear description of Ephrafa.
Oh yes, you have. The whole idea scares me stiff. But we're going to do it.
It can't be done.
It can't be done by fighting or fair words, no. So it will have to be done by means of a trick.
There's no trick will get the better of that lot, believe me. There are far more of them than there are of us. They're very highly organized, and I'm only telling the truth when I say that they can fight, run, and follow a trail every bit as well as we can, and a lot of them much better.
The trick, said Hazel, turning to Blackberry, who all this time had been nibbling and listening in silence. The trick will have to do three things. First, it will have to get the does out of Ephrafa, and secondly, it will have to put paid to the pursuit. For a pursuit there's bound to be, and we can't expect another miracle. But that's not all. Once we're clear of the place, we've got to become impossible to find, beyond the reach of any wide patrol.
Yes, said Blackberry doubtfully. Yes, I agree. To succeed, we should have to manage all those things.
Yes, and this trick, Blackberry, is going to be devised by you.
The sweet carrion scent of dogwood filled the air. In evening sunshine, the insects hummed around the dense white cymes hanging low above the grass. A pair of brown and orange beetles, disturbed by the feeding rabbits, took off from a grass stem and flew away, still coupled together.
They mate. We don't, said Hazel, watching them go. A trick, Blackberry. A trick to put us right once and for all.
I can see how to do the first thing, said Blackberry. At least I think I can. But it's dangerous. The other two I can't see at all yet, and I'd like to talk it over with Fiver.
The sooner Fiver and I get back to the Warren, the better, said Hazel. My leg's good enough now, but all the same, I think we'll leave it for tonight.
Good old Holly. Will you tell them that Fiver and I will come early tomorrow morning?
It worries me to think that Bigwig and Silver may start fighting about Clover at any moment.
Hazel, said Holly, listen, I don't like this idea of yours at all. I've been in Ephrafa, and you haven't. You're making a bad mistake, and you might very well get us all killed.
It was Fiver who replied.
It ought to feel like that, I know, he said. But somehow it doesn't. Not to me. I believe we can do it. Anyway, I'm sure Hazel's right when he says it's the only chance we've got. Suppose we go on talking about it for a bit.
Not now, said Hazel.
Time for underground down here. Come on. But if you two race up the hill, you'll probably be in time for some more sunshine at the top. Good night.
Chapter 29 Return and Departure.
He which hath no stomach to this fight, let him depart. His passport shall be made, and crowns for convoy put into his purse. We would not die in that man's company that fears his fellowship to die with us.
Shakespeare, Henry V.
The following morning, all the rabbits were out at Silfley by dawn, and there was a good deal of excitement as they waited for Hazel. During the previous few days, Blackberry had had to repeat several times the story of the journey to the farm and the finding of Hazel in the drain. One or two had suggested that Kihar must have found Hazel and told Fiver secretly, but Kihar denied this, and when pressed, replied cryptically that Fiver was one who had travelled a good deal further than he had himself. As for Hazel, he had acquired, in everyone's eyes, a kind of magical quality. Of all the Warren, Dandelion was the last rabbit to fail to do justice to a good story, and he had made the most of Hazel's heroic dash out of the ditch to save his friends from the farmers. No one had even suggested that Hazel might have been reckless in going to the farm. Against all odds, he had got them two does, and now he was bringing their luck back to the Warren. Just before sunrise, Pipkin and Speedwell saw Fiver coming through the wet grass near the summit of the down. They ran out to meet him and waited with him until Hazel came up to them. Hazel was limping and had evidently found the climb a strain, but after resting and feeding for a short time, he was able to run down to the Warren almost as fast as the others. The rabbits crowded round. Everyone wanted to touch him. He was sniffed and tussled with and rolled over in the grass until he felt almost as though he were being attacked. Human beings on occasions of this kind are usually full of questions, but the rabbits expressed their delight simply by proving to themselves, through their senses, that this was really Hazel Ra. It was all he could do to stand up to the rough play. "I wonder what would happen if I lay down under it," he thought. "They'd kick me out, I dare say. They wouldn't have a crippled chief rabbit. This is a test, as well as a welcome, even though they don't know it themselves. I'll test them, the rascals, before I'm done." He pushed Buckthorn and Speedwell off his back and broke away to the edge of the wood. Strawberry and Boxwood were on the bank, and he joined them and sat washing and combing himself in the sunrise. "We can do with a few well-behaved fellows like you," he said to Boxwood. "Look at that rough lot out there. They nearly finished me off. What on earth do you make of us, and how are you settling down?" "Well, of course, we find it strange," said Boxwood. "But we're learning. Strawberry here has been helping me a great deal. We were just seeing how many smells I could tell on the wind. But that's something that'll only come slowly. Smells are awfully strong on a farm, you know. They don't mean much when you live behind wire. Far as I can make out, you all live by smell." "Don't take too many risks to begin with," said Hazel. "Keep near the burrows. Don't go out alone, all that sort of thing. And how about you, Strawberry? Are you better?"
"More or less," answered Strawberry. "As long as I sleep a lot and sit in the sun, Hazel Ra. I've been terrified half out of my wits. That's the bottom of it. I've had the shivers and the horrors for days. I kept thinking I was back in Ephrafa."
"What was it like in Ephrafa?" asked Hazel.
"I'd rather die than go back to Ephrafa," said Strawberry, "or risk going anywhere near it. I don't know which was worse, the boredom or the fear. All the same," he added after a few moments, "there are rabbits there who'd be the same as we are if they could only live naturally, like us. Several would be glad to leave the place, if they only could."
Before they went underground, Hazel talked to almost all the rabbits. As he expected, they were disappointed over the failure at Ephrafa and full of indignation at the ill treatment of Holly and his companions. More than one thought, like Holly, that the two does were likely to give rise to trouble.
"There should have been more, Hazel," said Bigwig. "We shall all be at each other's throats, you know. I don't see how it's to be helped."
Late in the afternoon, Hazel called everyone into the honeycomb.
"I've been thinking things over," he said. "I know you must all have been really disappointed not to have got rid of me at Nuthanger Farm the other day. So I've decided to go a bit further next time."
"Where?"
asked Bluebell.
"To Ephrafa," replied Hazel. "If I can get anyone to come with me,
and we shall bring back as many does as the warren needs."
There were murmurs of astonishment, and then Speedwell asked,
"How?"
"Blackberry and I have got a plan," said Hazel, "but I'm not going to explain it now for this reason. You all know that this is going to be a dangerous business. If any of you get caught and taken into Ephrathah, they'll make you talk all right. But those who don't know a plan can't give it away. I'll explain it later on, at the proper time."
"Are you going to need many rabbits, Hazelrah?" asked Dandelion.
"From all I hear, the whole lot of us wouldn't be enough to fight the Ephrathans."
"I hope we shan't have to fight at all," replied Hazel. "But there's always the possibility. Anyway, it'll be a long journey home with the does, and if by any chance we meet a wide patrol on the way, there have got to be enough of us to deal with them."
"Would we have to go into Ephrathah?"
asked Pipkin timidly.
"No," said Hazel. "We shall—"
"I never thought, Hazel," interrupted Holly, "I never thought that the time would come when I should feel obliged to speak against you. But I can only say again that this is likely to be a complete disaster. I know what you think. You're counting on General Woundwort not having anyone as clever as Blackberry and Fiver. You're quite right. I don't think he has. But the fact remains that no one can get a bunch of does away from that place. You all know that I've spent my life patrolling and tracking in the open. Well, there are rabbits in the Ephrathan Ousler who are better at it than I am. I'm admitting it. And they'll hunt you down with your does and kill you. Great Frith, we all have to meet our match sometime or other. I know you want only to help us all, but do be sensible and give this scheme up. Believe me, the best thing to do with a place like Ephrathah is to stay as far away from it as possible." Talk broke out all over the honeycomb.
"That must be right. Who wants to be torn to pieces? That rabbit with the mutilated ears. Well, but Hazelrah must know what's doing. It's too far. I don't want to go."
Hazel waited patiently for quiet. At last he said,
"It's like this. We can stay here and try to make the best of things as they are, or we can put them right once and for all. Of course there's a risk. Anyone knows that who's heard what happened to Holly and the others. But haven't we faced one risk after another all the way from the warren we left? What do you mean to do? Stay here and scratch each other's eyes out over two does, when there are plenty in Ephrathah that you're afraid to go and get, even though they'd be only too glad to come and join us?" Someone called out, "What does Fiver think?"
"I'm certainly going," said Fiver quietly. "Hazel's perfectly right, and there's nothing the matter with his plan. But I promise you this, all of you. If I do come, later on, to feel any kind of misgiving, I shan't keep it to myself.
And if that happens, I shan't ignore it," said Hazel.
There was silence. Then Bigwig spoke.
"You may as well all know that I'm going," he said. "And we shall have Kahar with us, if that appeals to you at all."
There was a buzz of surprise.
"Of course, there are some of us who ought to stay here," said Hazel. "The farm rabbits can't be expected to go, and I'm not asking anyone who went the first time to go back again."
"I'll come, though," said Silver. "I hate General Woundwort and his council with all my guts, and if we're really going to make fools of them, I want to be there, as long as I don't have to go back inside the place. That I couldn't face. But after all, you're going to need someone who knows the way."
"I'll come,"
said Pipkin.
"Hazelrah saved my... I mean, I'm sure he knows what's..."
He became confused.
"Anyway, I'll come,"
he repeated in a very nervous voice. There was a scuffling in the run that led down from the wood, and Hazel called,
"Who's that?"
"It's I, Hazelrah, Blackberry."
Blackberry, said Hazel. Why, I thought you'd been here all the time. Where have you been?
Sorry not to have come before, said Blackberry. I've been talking to Kahar, as a matter of fact, about the plan. He's improved it a good deal, if I'm not mistaken. General Wundwurz going to look remarkably silly before we've finished. I thought at first that it couldn't be done, but now I feel sure it can.
Come where the grass is greener, said Bluebell, and the lettuce is growing rose, and a rabbit of free demeanour is known by his well-scratched nose.
I think I shall have to come, just to satisfy my curiosity. I've been opening and shutting my mouth like a baby bird to know about this plan, and no one puts anything in. I suppose Bigwig's going to dress up as a hoodoo and drive all the does across the field.
Hazel turned on him sharply. Bluebell sat up on his hind legs and said,
Please, General Wundwurz, sir, I'm only a little hoodoo, and I've left all my petrol on the grass. So if you wouldn't mind eating the grass, sir, while I just give this lady a ride.
Bluebell, said Hazel, shut up.
I'm sorry, Hazel Ra, replied Bluebell in surprise. I didn't mean any harm. I was only trying to cheer everyone up a bit. After all, most of us feel frightened at the idea of going to this place. You can't blame us, can you? It sounds horribly dangerous.
Well, look here, said Hazel. We'll finish this meeting now. Let's wait and see what we decide. That's the rabbit's way. No one has to go to Ephrathah who doesn't want to, but it's clear enough that some of us mean to go. Now I'm off to talk to Kahar myself. He found Kahar just inside the trees, snapping and tearing with his great beak at a foul-smelling piece of flaking brown flesh, which seemed to be hanging from a tracery of bones. He wrinkled his nose in disgust at the odour, which filled the wood around and was already attracting ants and bluebottles.
What on earth is that, Kahar?
He asked.
It smells appalling.
You not know? Him fish. Fish come from big water. Is good.
Come from big water?
Yeah.
Did you find it there?
Nah. Men have him. Down to farm is plenty big rubbish place. All things there. I go for food. Find him. All smell like big water. Pick him up. Bring him back. Make me think all about big water.
He began to tear again at the half-eaten kipper. Hazel sat choking with nausea and disgust as Kahar lifted it entire and beat it against a beetroot so that small fragments flew round them. He collected himself and made an effort.
Kahar, he said, Bigwig says you told him you'd come and help us to get the mothers out of the big warren.
Yeah, I come for you. Mr. Bigwig, he need me for help him. Vanny Derry talk to me. I know the rabbit is good, yeah.
Yes, rather. It's the only possible way. You're a good friend to us, Kahar.
Yeah. Help you forget mothers. But now, is this Mr. Hazel? Always I want big water now. Always. Is hearing big water want to fly to big water? Now soon you go, forget mothers. I help you, how you like. Then, when you getting mothers, I leave you there. Fly away. No come back. But I come back another time, yeah? Come in autumn, in winter, I come live here with you, yeah?
We shall miss you, Kahar. But when you come back, we'll have a fine warren here, with lots of mothers. You'll be able to feel proud of all you did to help us.
Yeah, will be so. But Mr. Hazel, when you go, I won't help you, but I no want wait for go pig water. It's hard now for stay, you know. This what you do. Do him quick, yeah?
Bigwig came up the run, put his head out of the hole, and stopped in horror.
Frith up a tree, he said. What a fearful smell. Did you kill it, Kahar? Or did it die under a stone?
You like Mr. Bigwig? I bring you nice little bit, yeah.
Bigwig, said Hazel, go and tell all the others that we're setting off at daybreak tomorrow. Holly will be chief rabbit here until we get back, and Buckthorn, Strawberry, and the farm rabbits are to stay with him. Anyone else who wants to stay will be perfectly free to do so.
Don't worry, said Bigwig from the hole. I'll send them all up to Silfly with Kihar. They'll go anywhere you like before a duck can dive.
Part 3. Ephrafa. Chapter 30. A New Journey. An undertaking of great advantage, but nobody to know what it is. Company Prospectus of the South Sea Bubble. With the exception of Buckthorn and the addition of Bluebell, the rabbits who set off from the southern end of the beach hangar early the next morning were those who had left Sandalford with Hazel 5 weeks before. Hazel had said nothing more to persuade them, feeling that it would be better simply to leave things to set in his favour. He knew that they were afraid, for he was afraid himself. Indeed, he guessed that they, like himself, could not be free from the thought of Ephrafa and its grim Ausla. But working against this fear was their longing and need to find more does and the knowledge that there were plenty of does in Ephrafa. Then there was their sense of mischief. All rabbits love to trespass and steal, and when it comes to the point, very few will admit that they are afraid to do so, unless, like Buckthorn or Strawberry on this occasion, they know that they are not fit and that their bodies may let them down in the pinch. Again, in speaking about his secret plan, Hazel had aroused their curiosity. He had hoped that, with Fiver behind him, he could lure them with hints and promises, and he had been right. The rabbits trusted him and Fiver, who had gotten them out of Sandalford before it was too late, crossed the Enbourne and the Common, taken Bigwig out of the Wire, founded the Warren on the Downs, made an ally of Kahar, and produced two does against all odds. There was no telling what they would do next. But they were evidently up to something. And since Bigwig and Blackberry seemed to be confidently in on it, no one was ready to say that he would rather stay out, especially since Hazel had made it clear that anyone who wished could remain at home and welcome, implying that if he was so poor-spirited as to choose to miss the exploit, they could do without him. Holly, in whom loyalty was second nature, had said no more to queer the pitch. He accompanied them as far as the end of the wood with all the cheerfulness he could muster, only begging Hazel, out of hearing of the rest, not to underrate the danger.
"Send news by Kahar when he reaches you," he said, "and come back soon."
Nevertheless, as Silver guided them southward along higher ground to the west of the farm, almost all, now that they were actually committed to the adventure, felt dread and apprehension. They had heard enough about Ephrafa to daunt the stoutest heart, but before reaching it, or wherever they were going, they had to expect 2 days on the open down. Foxes, stoats, weasels, any of these might be encountered, and the only recourse would be flight above ground. Their progress was straggling and broken, slower than that which Holly had made with his picked band of three. Rabbits strayed, took alarm, stopped to rest. After a time, Hazel divided them into groups, led by Silver, Bigwig, and himself. Yet still they moved slowly, like climbers on a rock face, first some and then others taking their turn to cross the same piece of ground. But at least the cover was good. June was moving toward July and high summer. Hedgerows and verges were at their rankest and thickest. The rabbits sheltered in dim green sun-flecked caves of grass, flowering marjoram and cow parsley, peered round spotted hairy-stemmed clumps of viper's bugloss, blooming red and blue above their heads, pushed between towering stalks of yellow mullein. Sometimes they scuttled along open turf, coloured like a tapestry meadow, with self-healed centauri and tormentel. Because of their anxiety about Elil, and because they were nose to ground and unable to see far ahead, the way seemed long. Had their journey been made in years gone by, they would have found the downs far more open, with outstanding crops, grazed close by sheep, and they could hardly have hoped to go far unobserved by enemies. But the sheep were long gone, and the tractors had ploughed great expanses for wheat and barley. The smell of the green, standing corn was round them all day. The mice were numerous, and so were the kestrels. The kestrels were disturbing. But Hazel had been right when he guessed that a healthy, full-grown rabbit was too large a quarry for them. At all events, no one was attacked from above. Sometime before Neafrith, in the heat of the day, Silver paused in a little patch of thorn. There was no breeze, and the air was full of the sweet, chrysanthemum-like smell of the flowering compositae of dry uplands. Corn, chamomile, yarrow, and tansy. As Hazel and Fiver came up and squatted beside him, he looked out across the open ground ahead.
"There, Hazelrath," he said. "That's the wood that Holly didn't like."
200 or 300 yards away, and directly across their line, a belt of trees ran straight across the down, stretching in each direction as far as they could see. They had come to the line of the portway, only intermittently a road, which runs from north of Andover through St. Mary Bourne with its bells and streams and watercress beds, through Bradley Wood, on across the Downs, and so to Tadley, and at last to Silchester,
the Romans' Calavi Artabatum.
Where it crosses the Downs, the line is marked by Caesar's Belt, a strip of woodland as straight as the road, narrow indeed, but more than 3 miles long. In this hot noonday, the trees of the belt were looped and netted with darkest shadow. The sun lay outside, the shadows inside the trees. All was still, save for the grasshoppers and the falling finch song of the yellowhammer on the thorn. Hazel looked steadily for a long time, listening with raised ears and wrinkling his nose in the unmoving air.
"I can't see anything wrong with it," he said at last. "Can you, Fiver?"
"No,"
replied Fiver.
"Holly thought it was a strange kind of wood, and so it is. But there don't seem to be any men there. All the same, someone ought to go and make sure, I suppose. Shall I?"
The third group had come up while Hazel had been gazing at the belt. Now all the rabbits were either nibbling quietly or resting, with ears laid flat, in the light green sun and shade of the thorn thicket. "Is Bigwig there?" asked Hazel. Throughout the morning Bigwig had seemed unlike himself, silent and preoccupied, with little attention for what was going on around him. If his courage had not been beyond question, it might have been thought that he was feeling nervous. During one long halt, Bluebell had overheard him talking with Hazel, Fiver, and Blackberry, and later had told Pitkin that it sounded for all the world as though Bigwig were being reassured.
"Fighting, yes, anywhere," he had heard him say, "but I still reckon that this game is more in someone else's line than mine."
"No," replied Hazel, "you're the only one that can do it. And remember, this isn't sport if the farm raid was. Everything depends on it."
Then, realizing that Bluebell could hear him, he added,
"Anyway, keep on thinking about it and try to get used to the idea. We must get on now."
Bigwig had gone moodily down the hedgerow to collect his group. Now he came out of a nearby clump of mugwort and flowering thistle and joined Hazel under the thorn.
"What do you want?"
he asked abruptly.
"King of cats, Pfeffera,"
answered Hazel.
"Would you like to go and have a look in those trees? And if you find any cats, or men, or anything like that, just chase them off, would you? And then come and tell us it's all right."
When Bigwig had slipped away, Hazel said to Silver, "Have you any idea how far the wide patrols go out? Are we inside their range yet?"
"I don't know, but I'd guess that we are," said Silver. "As I understand it, the range is up to the patrol. Under a pushing sort of captain, a patrol may go out a long way, I believe."
"I see," said Hazel. "Well, I don't want to meet a patrol if it can possibly be helped. And if we do, Not one of them must get back to Ephrathah. That's one reason why I brought so many of us. But by way of avoiding them, I'm going to try to make use of this wood. Perhaps they don't fancy it any more than Holly did.
But surely it doesn't run the way we want to go, said Silver.
We're not going to Ephrathah, though, said Hazel. We're going to find somewhere to hide, as near to it as we can safely get. Any ideas?
Only that it's terribly dangerous, Hazel Ra, said Silver. You can't get near Ephrathah safely, and I don't know how you can begin to look for somewhere to hide. And then the patrol, if there is one. They'll be cunning brutes. They might very well spot us and not show themselves at all. Simply go and report.
Well, here comes Bigwig back again, said Hazel. Is it all right, Bigwig? Good, let's get them into the wood and go down the length of it a little way. Then we must slip out on the other side and make sure that Kahar finds us. He's coming to look for us this afternoon, and at all costs we mustn't miss him. Less than half a mile to the west, they came upon a spinney adjoining the southern edge of Caesar's Belt. To the west again was a shallow, dry downland coombe, perhaps 400 yards across, and overgrown with weeds and rough, yellowing summer tussocks. There, well before sunset, Kihar, flying westward down the belt, spotted the rabbits lying up, all among the nettles and goosegrass. He sailed down and alighted near Hazel and Fiver.
"How's Holly?" asked Hazel.
"He's sad," said Kihar. "He say you no come back."
Then he added,
"Miss Clover, she ready for mother."
"That's good," said Hazel. "Is anyone doing anything about it?"
"Yeah, yeah, it's all to fight."
"Oh, well, I suppose it'll sort itself out."
"What you do now, Mr. Hazel?"
"This is where you start helping, Kihar. We need a place to hide, as near the big warren as we can safely get. Somewhere where those other rabbits won't find us. If you know the country well enough, perhaps you can suggest something."
"Mr. Hazel, how close you want?"
"Well, no further away than Nuthanger Farm is from the honeycomb. In fact, that's really about the limit."
"It's only one thing, Mr. Hazel. You go other side river, then they not find you."
"Over the river? You mean we swim across?"
"Nah, nah, rabbit no swim this river. It's big, it's deep, go quick. But it's bridge. Then other side, plenty place for hide. It's close to Warren, like you say."
"And you think that's the best we can do?"
"It's plenty trees and it's river. Other rabbits no find you."
"What do you think?" said Hazel to Fiver.
"It sounds better than I'd hoped for," said Fiver. "I hate to say it, but I think we ought to go straight there as fast as we can, even if it makes everyone exhausted. We're in danger all the time we're on the down, but once we get off it, we can rest."
"Well, I suppose we'd better go on by night, if they'll do it. We've done it before. But they must feed and rest first. Start fooling they. There'll be a moon."
"Oh, how I've come to loathe those words, start and fooling they," said Blackberry.
However, the evening feed was peaceful and cool, and after a time, everyone felt refreshed. As the sun was sinking, Hazel brought them all together under close cover to chew pellets and rest. Although he did his best to appear confident and cheerful, he could feel that they were on edge, and after parrying one or two questions about the plan, he began to wonder how he could distract their thoughts and get them to relax until they were ready to set off again. He remembered the time, on the first night of his leadership, when they had been forced to rest in the wood above the Enbourne. At least it was good to see that no one was exhausted now. They were as tough a bunch of Hlesel as ever raided a garden. Not a blade of grass to choose between them, thought Hazel. Pipkin and Fiver looked as fresh as Silver and Bigwig. Still, a little entertainment would be all to the good and raise their spirits. He was just going to speak up when Acorn saved him the trouble.
"Will you tell us a story, Dandelion?"
he asked.
"Yes, yes," said several others. "Come on, make it a stunner while you're at it."
"All right," said Dandelion.
How about El Herrera and the Fox in the Water?
Let's have the Hole in the Sky, said Hawkbit.
No, not that, said Bigwig suddenly.
He'd spoken very little all the evening, and everyone looked round.
If you're going to tell a story, there's only one I want, he went on. El Herrera and the Black Rabbit of Inlay.
Perhaps not that one, said Hazel.
Bigwig grounded on him, snarling. If there's going to be a story, don't you think I've got as good a right as anyone to choose it? He asked.
Hazel did not reply, and after a pause, during which no one else spoke, Dandelion, with a rather subdued manner, began.
Chapter 31 The Story of El Herrera and the Black Rabbit of Inlay. The power of the night, the press of the storm, the post of the foe. Where he stands, the arch fear in a visible form. Yet the strong man must go. Robert Browning, Prospice.
Sooner or later, everything leaks out, and animals get to hear what others think about them. Some say that it was Hafsa who told King Darzan the truth about the trick with the lettuces. Others say that Yona the Hedgehog went gossiping in the copses. But however it was, King Darzan got to know that he had been made a fool when he delivered his lettuces to the marshes of Kel'thuzin. He did not call his soldiers out to fight, not yet, but he made up his mind that he would find an opportunity to get his own back on El Herrera. El Herrera knew this, and he warned all his people to be careful, especially when they went about alone. Now, late one afternoon in February, Rab Scuttle led some of the rabbits out to a rubbish heap on the edge of a garden, some way away from the warren. The evening came on cold and misty, and well before twilight, a fog came down thick. They set off for home, but they got lost, and then they had trouble with an owl and became confused over their direction. Anyway, Rab Scuttle got separated from the others, and after wandering about for some time, he strayed into the guards' quarters outside King Darzan's city, and they caught him and took him up to the king. King Darzan saw his chance to spite El Herrera. He put Rab Scuttle into a special prison hole, and every day he was brought out and made to work, sometimes in the frost, digging and tunnelling. But El Herrera swore he would get him out somehow, and so he did, for he and two of his does spent 4 days digging a tunnel from the wood into the back of the bank where Rab Scuttle had been set to work. And in the end, this tunnel came near to the hole in the bank down which Rab Scuttle had been sent. He was supposed to be digging to turn the hole into a storeroom, and the guards were watching outside while he worked. But El Herrera reached him, for he could hear him scratching in the dark, and they all slipped away down the tunnel and escaped through the wood. When the news reached King Darzan, he became very angry indeed, and he determined that this time he would start a war and finish El Herrera once and for all. His soldiers set out in the night and went to the meadows of Fenlow, but they couldn't get down the rabbit holes. Some tried, to be sure, but they soon came out again, because they met El Herrera and the other rabbits. They were not used to fighting in narrow places in the dark, and they got bitten and scratched until they were glad to come out tail first. But they didn't go away. They sat outside and waited. Whenever any of the rabbits tried to sylflay, they found their enemies ready to jump on them. King Darzan and his soldiers couldn't watch all the holes. There were too many. But they were quick enough to dash off whenever they saw a rabbit show his nose. Very soon, El Herrera's people found that it was all they could do to snatch a mouthful or two of grass, just enough to keep alive, before they had to bolt underground again. El Herrera tried every trick he could think of, but he couldn't be rid of King Darzan or get his own people away.
The rabbits began to become thin and miserable underground, and some of them fell ill. At last, El Herrera felt quite desperate, and one night, when he had been risking his life again and again to bring down a few mouthfuls of grass for a doe and her family, whose father had been killed the day before, he called out, "Lord Frith, I would do anything to save my people. I would drive a bargain with a stoat or a fox, yes, or with the black rabbit of Inlay." Now, as soon as he had said this, El Herrera realized in his heart that if there was one creature anywhere who might have the will and certainly had the power to destroy his enemies, it was the black rabbit of Inlay. For he was a rabbit, and yet more powerful than King Darzan 1,000 times over. But the thought made El Herrera sweat and shudder, so that he had to crouch down where he was in the run. After a time, he went to his own burrow and began to think of what he had said and what it meant. Now, as you all know, the black rabbit of Inlay is fear and everlasting darkness. He is a rabbit, but he is that cold, bad dream from which we can only entreat Lord Frith to save us today and tomorrow. When the snare is set in the gap, the black rabbit knows where the peg is driven. And when the weasel dances, the black rabbit is not far off. You all know how some rabbits seem just to throw their lives away between two jokes and a theft. But the truth is that their foolishness comes from the black rabbit. For it is by his will that they do not smell the dog or see the gun. The black rabbit brings sickness too, or again he will come in the night and call a rabbit by name, and then that rabbit must go out to him, even though he may be young and strong, to save himself from any other danger. He goes with the black rabbit and leaves no trace behind. Some say that the black rabbit hates us and wants our destruction. But the truth is, or so they taught me, that he too serves Lord Frith and does no more than his appointed task to bring about what must be. We come into the world and we have to go. But we do not go merely to serve the turn of one enemy or another. If that was so, we would all be destroyed in a day. We go by the will of the black rabbit of Inlay, and only by his will. And though that will seems hard and bitter to us all, yet in his way he is our protector, for he knows Frith's promise to the rabbits, and he will avenge any rabbit who may chance to be destroyed without the consent of himself. Anyone who has seen a gamekeeper's gibbet knows what the black rabbit can bring down on Elil who think they will do what they will. El Herrera spent the night alone in his burrow, and his thoughts were terrible. As far as he knew, no rabbit had ever tried to do what he had in mind. But the more he thought about it, as well as he could for hunger and fear and the trance that comes upon rabbits face to face with death, the more it seemed to him that there was at least a chance of success. He would seek out the black rabbit and offer him his own life in return for the safety of his people. But if, when he offered his life, he did not mean the offer to be accepted, it would be better not to go near the black rabbit at all. The black rabbit might not accept his life, yet still, perhaps, he might get a chance to try something else. Only there could be no cheating the black rabbit. If his people's safety were to be had, by whatever means, the price would be his life. So unless he failed, he would not return. He would therefore need a companion to bring back whatever it was that was going to overthrow King Darzan and save the Warren. In the morning,
Elarira went to find Rabscuttle, and they talked far into the day. Then he called his Ousla together and told them what he meant to do. Later that evening, in the last of the twilight, the rabbits came out and attacked King Darzin's soldiers. They fought very bravely, and some of them were killed. The enemy thought they were trying to break out of the warren and did everything they could to surround them and force them back into their holes. But the truth was that all the fighting was simply to distract King Darzin's attention and keep his soldiers busy. As darkness set in, Elarera and Rabscuttle slipped out from the other end of the warren and made off down the ditch, while the Ousla fell back and King Darzin's soldiers jeered at them down the holes. As for King Darzin, he sent a message to say that he was ready to talk to Elarera about terms of surrender. Elarera and Rabscuttle set out on their dark journey. What way they went, I don't know, and no rabbit knows. But I always remember what old Feverfew, do you remember him, used to say when he told this story. They didn't take long, he said. They took no time at all. No, they limped and stumbled through a bad dream to that terrible place they were bound for. Where they were travelling, the sun and moon mean nothing, and winter and summer less. But you will never know. And then he used to look all round at us. You will never know, and neither do I, how far Elarera went on his journey into the dark. You see the top of a great stone sticking out of the ground. How far is it to the middle? Split the stone, then you'll know. At last they came to a high place where there was no grass. They scrambled upward, over splinters of slate, among grey rocks bigger than sheep. Mist and icy rain swirled about them, and there was no sound but the trickling of water, and sometimes, from far above, the cry of some great evil bird on the wing. And these sounds echoed, for they were between black cliffs of stone, taller than the tallest trees. The snow lay in patches all about, for the sun never shone to melt it. The moss was slippery, and whenever they pushed out a pebble, it rattled down and down behind them in the gullies. But Elarera knew the way, and on he went, until the mists grew so thick that they could see nothing. Then they kept close to the cliff, and little by little as they went, it overhung them until it made a dark roof above their backs. Where the cliff ended was the mouth of a tunnel, like a huge rabbit hole. In the freezing cold and silence, Elarera stamped and flashed his tail to Rabscuttle. And then, as they were about to go into the tunnel, they realized that what they had thought, in the gloom, to be a part of the rock was not rock. It was the black rabbit of Inlay, close beside them, still as lichen and cold as the stone.
"Hazel," said Pipkin, staring into the dusk and trembling, "I don't like this story. I know I'm not brave."
"It's all right, Hleru," said Fiver. "You're not the only one."
In fact, he himself seemed composed and even detached, which was more than could be said for any other rabbit in the audience. But Pipkin was hardly to realize this.
"Let's go out there for a bit and watch the spiders catching moths, shall we?" said Fiver. "I think I can remember where I left a patch of vetch. It must be somewhere this way."
Still talking quietly, he led Pipkin out into the overgrown coombe. Hazel turned to make sure of the direction they had taken, and as he did so, Dandelion hesitated, uncertain whether to resume.
"Go on," said Bigwig, "and don't leave anything out."
"I think many things are left out, if only the truth could be known," said Dandelion. "For no one can see what happens in that country where Elarera went of his own accord, and we do not. But
As I was told, when they first became aware of the Black Rabbit, they fled down the tunnel, as needs they must, for there was nowhere else to run. And this they did, although they had come on purpose to encounter him, and all depended on their doing so. They did no differently from all of us, and the end, too, was no different. For when they had done slipping and tripping and falling along the tunnel, they found themselves in a vast stone burrow. All was of stone. The Black Rabbit had dug it out of the mountain with his claws. And there they found, waiting for them, him from whom they had fled. There were others in that burrow also, shadows without sound or smell. The Black Rabbit has his ousler too, you know. I would not care to meet them. The Black Rabbit spoke with the voice of water that falls into pools in echoing places in the dark. Ella Arera, why have you come here?
I have come for my people, whispered El Herrera.
The Black Rabbit smelled as clean as last year's bones, and in the dark El Herrera could see his eyes, for they were red with a light that gave no light.
You are a stranger here, El Herrera, said the Black Rabbit. You are alive.
My lord, replied El Herrera, I have come to give you my life for my people. The Black Rabbit drew his claws along the floor.
Bargains, bargains, El Herrera, he said. There is not a day or a night but a doe offers her life for her kittens, or some honest captain of Ousler his life for his chief rabbits. Sometimes it is taken, sometimes it is not. But there is no bargain, for here what is what must be. El Herrera was silent, but he thought, perhaps I can trick him into taking my life. He would keep a promise, as Prince Rainbow kept his.
You are my guest, El Herrera, said the Black Rabbit.
Stay in my burrow as long as you wish. You may sleep here, and you may eat here, and they are few indeed who can do as much.
Let him eat, he said to the ousler. We will not eat, my lord, said El Herrera, for he knew that if he ate the food which they gave him in that burrow, his secret thoughts would become plain, and there would be an end of tricks.
Then at least we must entertain you, said the Black Rabbit. You must feel at home, El Herrera, and make yourself comfortable. Come, let us play bobstones.
Very well, said El Herrera, and if I win, my lord, perhaps you will be so good as to accept my life in return for my people's safety.
I will, said the Black Rabbit, but if I win, El Herrera, you shall give me both your tail and your whiskers.
The stones were brought, and El Herrera sat down in the cold and the echoes to play against the Black Rabbit of Inlay. Now, as you may suppose, El Herrera knew how to play bobstones. He could play as well as any rabbit that ever covered a cast. But there, in that dreadful place, with the Black Rabbit's eyes upon him, and the ousler, who made no sound, try as he would, his wits deserted him, and even before he cast, he felt that the Black Rabbit knew what was down. The Black Rabbit showed never the least haste. He played as the snow falls, without sound or change, until at last El Herrera's spirit failed him, and he knew that he could not win.
You can pay your stakes to the ousler, El Herrera, said the Black Rabbit, and they will show you a burrow to sleep in. I shall return tomorrow, and if you are still here, I will see you. But you are free to leave whenever you wish. Then the ostler took Ailurira away and cut off his tail and pulled out his whiskers. And when he came to himself, he was alone with Rabscuttle in a hollow stone burrow with an opening to the mountain outside. "Oh, master," said Rabscuttle, "what will you do now? For Frith's sake, let us go away. I can feel for both of us in the dark."
"Certainly not," said Ailurira. He still hoped to get what he wanted from the black rabbit somehow, and he felt sure that they had been put into this burrow so that they would be tempted to steal away.
"Certainly not. I can make do very well with some willow herb and clematis. Go out and get some, Rabscuttle, but make sure you come back before tomorrow evening. You'd better try to bring some food too, if you can." Rabscuttle went out as he was told, and Ailurira was left alone. He slept very little, partly for the pain and partly for the fear that never left him, but chiefly because he was still searching for some trick that would serve his turn. The next day, Rabscuttle returned with some pieces of turnip, and after Ailurira had eaten them, Rabscuttle helped him to patch himself up with a grey tail and whiskers made from the winter drift of clematis and ragwort. In the evening, he went to meet the black rabbit as though nothing had happened.
"Well, Ailurira," said the black rabbit, and he did not wrinkle his nose up and down when he sniffed, but thrust it forward as a dog does. "My burrow cannot be what you are used to. But perhaps you have done your best to make yourself comfortable."
"I have, my lord," said Ailurira. "I am glad that you allow me to stay."
"Perhaps we will not play bobstones tonight," said the black rabbit. "You must understand, Ailurira, that I have no wish to make you suffer. I am not one of the thousand. I repeat, you may stay or leave as you please. But if you are going to remain, perhaps you would care to hear a story, and to tell one yourself, if you like."
"Certainly, my lord," said Ailurira, "and if I can tell a story as good as yours, perhaps you will accept my life and grant the safety of my people."
"I will," said the black rabbit. "But if not, Ailurira, you will have to forfeit your ears."
He waited to see whether Ailurira would refuse the wager, but he did not.
Then the black rabbit told such a tale of fear and darkness as froze the hearts of Rabscuttle and Ailurira where they crouched on the rock, for they knew that every word was true. Their wits turned. They seemed to be plunged in icy clouds that numbed their senses, and the black rabbit's story crept into their hearts like a worm into a nut, leaving them shriveled and empty. When at last that terrible story was ended, Ailurira tried to speak, but he could not collect his thoughts, and he stammered and ran about the floor like a mouse when the hawk glides low. The black rabbit waited silently, with no sign of impatience. At last it was clear that there would be no story from Ailurira, and the ostler took him and put him into a deep sleep. And when he woke, his ears were gone, and only Rabscuttle was beside him in the stone burrow, crying like a kitten.
"Master," said Rabscuttle, "what good can the suffering bring? For the sake of Lord Frith and the green grass, let me take you home."
"Nonsense," said Ailurira.
"Go out and get me two good big dock leaves. They will do very well for ears." "They will wither, master," said Rabscuttle, "and I am withered now."
"They will last long enough," said Ailurira grimly, "for what I have to do.
but I cannot find the way. When Rabscuttle was gone, Ellerera forced himself to think clearly. The Black Rabbit would not accept his life. Also, it was plain that he himself would never be able to win any sort of wager against him. He might as well try to run a race across a sheet of ice. But if the Black Rabbit did not hate him, why did he inflict these sufferings upon him? To destroy his courage and make him give up and go away? But why not simply send him away? And why wait before hurting him, till he himself proposed a wager and lost it? The answer came to him suddenly. These shadows had no power either to send him away or to hurt him, except with his own consent. They would not help him, no. They would seek possession of his will and break it if they could. But supposing that he could find among them something that would save his people, could they stop him from taking it away? When Rabscuttle came back, he helped Ellerera to disguise his horrible maimed head with two dock leaves in places of ears, and after a while they slept. But Ellerera kept dreaming of his starving rabbits waiting in the runs to push back King Dalzin's soldiers and placing all their hopes in him, and at last he woke, cold and cramped, and wandered out into the runs of the Stone Warren. As he limped along, trailing the dock leaves on either side of his head, for he could not raise or move them like the ears he had lost, he came to a place from which several narrow runs led down deeper into the ground. And here he found two of the ghastly, shadowy Ausla moving about some dark business of their own. They turned and stared to make him afraid, but Ellerera was past being afraid, and he stared back at them, wondering what they had in mind to persuade him to lose. "Turn back, Ellerera," said one at last. "You have no business here, in the pit. You are alive, and have suffered much already." "Not as much as my people," replied Ellerera. "There is enough suffering here for 1,000 warrens," said the shadow. "Do not be stubborn, Ellerera. In these holes lie all the plagues and diseases that come to rabbits. Fever and mange and the sickness of the bowels. And here too, in this nearest hole, lies the white blindness that sends creatures hobbling out to die in the fields, where even the Elil will not touch their rotting bodies. This is our task, to see that all these are ready for the use of Inlira, for what is what must be." Then Ellerera knew that he must give himself no time to think. He pretended to go back, but suddenly turned, rushed upon the shadows, and plunged into the nearest hole faster than a raindrop into the ground. And there he lay, while the shadows flickered and gibbered about the entrance, for they had no power to move him except by fear. After a time they went away, and Ellerera was left alone, wondering whether he would be able to reach King Dalzin's army in time without the use of whiskers or ears. At last, when he was sure that he must have stayed in the hole long enough to be infected, Ellerera came out and began to make his way back along the run. He did not know how soon the disease would appear or how long he would take to die, but plainly he ought to return as quickly as he could, if possible, before there was any sign of illness on him. Without going near Rabscuttle, he must tell him to hurry ahead, reach the rabbits in the warren, and warn them to block all the holes and stay inside until King Dalzin's army was destroyed. He blundered into a stone in the dark, for he was shivering and feverish, and in any case, he could feel little or nothing without his whiskers. At that moment, a quiet voice said, "Ellerera, where are you going?" He had heard nothing, but he knew that the Black Rabbit was beside him. "I am going home, my lord," he replied. "You said that I might go when I wished." "You have some purpose, Ellerera," said the Black Rabbit. "What is it?"
"I have been in the pit, my lord," answered Ellerera.
I am infected with the white blindness, and I am going to save my people by destroying the enemy.
Elarira, said the black rabbit, do you know how the white blindness is carried?
A sudden misgiving seized upon Elarira. He said nothing.
It is carried by the fleas in rabbits' ears, said the black rabbit. They pass from the ears of a sick rabbit to those of his companions. But, Elarina, you have no ears, and fleas will not go to dock leaves. You can neither catch nor carry the white blindness. Then at last, Elarira felt that his strength and courage were gone. He fell to the ground. He tried to move, but his back legs dragged along the rock and he could not get up. He scuffled and then lay still in the silence.
Elarira, said the black rabbit at last, this is a cold warren. A bad place for the living, and no place at all for warm hearts and brave spirits. You are a nuisance to me. Go home. I myself will save your people. Do not have the impertinence to ask me when. There is no time here. They are already saved.
In that moment, while King Darzan and his soldiers were still jeering down the holes of the warren, confusion and terror came upon them in the falling darkness. The field seemed full of huge rabbits with red eyes stalking among the thistles. They turned and fled. They vanished in the night. And that is why no rabbit who tells the tales of Elarira can say what kind of creatures they were or what they looked like. Not one of them has ever been seen from that day to this. When at last Elarira was able to rise to his feet, the black rabbit was gone, and Rab Scuttle was coming down the run looking for him. Together they went out to the mountainside and made their way down the stone-rattling gully in the mist. They did not know where they were going, except that they were going away from the black rabbit's warren. But after a time, it became plain that Elarira was ill from shock and exhaustion. Rab Scuttle dug a scrape, and there they stayed for several days. Later, when Elarira began to get better, they wandered on, but they could not find their way back. They were confused in their wits, and had to beg help and shelter of other animals whom they met. Their journey home lasted 3 months, and many adventures they had. Some of these, as you know, are stories in themselves. Once they lived with a Lendry and found pheasant's eggs for him in the wood. And once they barely escaped from the middle of a hayfield when the hay was cutting. All the time, Rab Scuttle looked after Elarira, brought him fresh dock leaves and kept the flies from his wounds until they healed. At last, one day, they came back to the warren. It was evening, and as the sun stretched out all the hills, they could see any number of rabbits at Silfley, nibbling in the grass and playing over the ant heaps. They stopped at the top of the field, sniffing the gorse and Herb Robert on the wind. Well, they look all right, said Elarira. A healthy lot, really. Let's just slip in quietly and see whether we can find one or two of the Ousler captains underground. We don't want a lot of fuss. They made their way along the hedgerow, but could not altogether get their bearings, because apparently the warren had grown bigger, and there were more holes than before, both in the bank and in the field. They stopped to speak to a group of smart young bucks and does sitting under the elder bloom. "We want to find Loosestrife," said Rab Scuttle. "Can you tell us where his burrow is?" "I never heard of him," answered one of the bucks. "Are you sure he's in this warren?" "Unless he's dead," said Rab Scuttle. "But surely you must have heard of Captain Loosestrife. He was an officer of the Ousler in the fighting." "What fighting?" asked another buck.
"'The fighting against King Darzan,' replied Rab Scuttle. "'Here, do me a favour, old fellow, will you?' said the buck. "'That fighting, I wasn't born when it finished.' "'But surely you know the Ousla captains who wear,' said Rab Scuttle. "'I wouldn't be seen